National Engineer for Southeastern Utah. We cover Van, San Juan, and Carbonate counties. And we've got with us John Mann, who is the vice, what do they call it? Assistant State Engineer. Assistant State Engineer over Appropriations. And John Solon, who works in the Appropriations Public Inquiry. And we have Rick Wild from our area office. And Dave Forsley is our assistant regional engineer in the area office.
Mark, I'm sorry, I'm just trying to get everything down. John Mann, how do you spell his last name?
M-A-N-M.
Okay, and the other gentleman was John Solon?
S-O-L-U-N.
S-O-L-U-N?
Yeah.
Okay, and may I have your title, sir?
Mine is Program Specialist.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Sign up sheet around.
It's not necessary for you to take real detailed notes. You can for your own purposes. We have this recorder set up here where we are recording the proceedings. Hopefully the microphone will pick everybody up. And what we'll do is we'll post that on our website. You can go back in and you can listen to that. So any of your friends or any people that might be interested in what's happened tonight, if they want to go through and they want to listen to the things that were said, we'll also put Mark's PowerPoint presentation out there. So
oh, that's great. Okay.
You basically have the whole meeting out there on our website.
Okay, that will be great. I would like to take notes just for our edification,
perfect,
if you don't mind.
And the purpose of tonight's meeting is it's a public meeting for review of a proposed policy for the Chatham Valley area. We'll get into the details of that request as we go through the presentation. We'll put together a little PowerPoint. We'll talk a little bit about the history of the water rights. We'll talk about the proposed requested policy, and then some of the details for it. So. With that, any questions before we get started? Okay, we'll move ahead then, maybe. So there's four, as we look at the history of the Cass Valley County water rights, there's four original rights, 05387, 411, 641, and 709. These are all now in the name of the town of Castle Valley. Originally, they were appropriated by William R. McCormick back in the 60s, 62 and 66 and 68. The source for the water was underground wells in Castle Valley. The beneficial uses listed on these water rights totaled 476.9 acres of irrigation. 1,300 head of livestock. At a later point in time, domestic use was added to all four rights via permanent change application. So the rights as they stand now have irrigation, stock watering, and domestic as the beneficial uses associated with them. When we're done, this PowerPoint presentation will be put up on our website as well, so you can access it through our public meetings. So, a little history of the appropriation policy. The past policy, and I pulled this off of our website, in 2005, the Cass Valley area where lots are sold with water under the development by Leisure Industries Incorporated, Cass Valley River Ranchos, is closed to new appropriations except for domestic filings made to replace prior lapsed applications. Many lot owners have conveyed their rights to the town of Cass Valley to facilitate the community system. So that was our policy at that time in 2005. At that time we had an active adjudication going on in the valley. Rick did a lot of that work. We had an adjudication team come in 2006-2007, helped finish up that adjudication. As the adjudication moved forward, a portion of these original rights, there was a potential that they could have been lost in the adjudication process. When we come into an area and adjudicate the rights, we look at the rights as they are in use at that present time. So it's a snapshot of the water rights at the time we come in and adjudicate them. And if there are water rights that have gone out of use for a period of, now the statute says 5-7 years, it used to say 5, then a lot of times those water rights are disallowed in the adjudication process because they've been not used, and there's been no use of them for that period of time. In 2008, the legislature allowed municipalities, public water suppliers, the opportunity to retain or have certain exemptions related to the forfeiture statute. And so when the adjudication was done, the state engineer made the decision that the water remaining on these water rights that was not in use would not be disallowed. So the rights retained their full value.
Even though they were not in use?
Yes. So at that time, well, in 2008, before the adjudication was published, with the idea that the portion of the rights that were not in use would be lost, our office went ahead and made a policy change that opened the area back to new appropriations from the state, with the intent that if these water rights were lost, if the portion that was not in use was lost, there would be very limited opportunities to obtain water rights in the home. So we opened the area back up, and our current policy as of 2008 is that for groundwater, the water resources of this area are considered to be limited. New appropriations are limited to small amounts of beneficial use sufficient to serve the domestic requirements of one family, the irrigation of 1 acre, and 10 head of livestock, or equivalent amounts of any of those uses or other uses such as commercial and mining or whatever the uses are. It doesn't necessarily have to be those exact uses, but the total volume of water that could not be exceeded at 6.73 acre feet.
Per 5 acres.
Per water right filing. And typically we only accept one filing per lot. Some water is available for larger appropriations on a temporary, that would be a 1 year, or fixed time period basis. We've done some fixed time applications. Generally, the fixed time period is 20 years. And each application is just evaluated on its merits. So there is no set limit for the amount of water that can be applied for under fixed time. We just look at the application and what the beneficial uses are associated with it and the merits of the application. All applications, including changes on existing water rights, are considered on their individual merits with emphasis on the potential to interfere with existing rights and to ensure that there is no enlargement of the underlying rights. And then proof must be submitted by a registered land surveyor or engineer licensed in the state of Utah. When the adjudication was completed, we used to be able to do elections where our office would come down and do the proof work. When the adjudication was completed, the area was closed to elections, and so now for new water right appropriations, the water user has to hire a land surveyor or engineer, professional engineer, to do the proof work. So that's our current policy as it stands right now. We've been in discussions with the town about the possibility of going back to the policy as it was essentially back in 2005, that the area would be closed to new appropriations because there is water available under the town's rights that could be allocated. And so in February 17th of 2010, the town of Castle Valley sent us a letter formally, and this is quoting from the letter, The town of Castle Valley formally requested the Division of Water Rights proceed with the process to close the Castle Valley aquifer within the town of Castle Valley municipal boundary. So that's one difference, is that this policy request was limited to the municipal boundaries of the town. To any future new water right appropriations. Whereas the town of Castle Valley has attained public water provider status, and in the Utah code, it gave certain criteria that in order to be considered a public water supplier, you had to meet certain criteria. And the town believes they have met those statutory requirements for a public water supplier. Has a system in place to monitor and accurately report water rights usage in the town of Castle Valley, and has surplus water rights capable of covering any future appropriations within the town boundary. The town of Castle Valley asserts that closing the aquifer within the town of Castle Valley municipal boundary is a prudent and necessary step to check the water resources quantity and quality of the town of Castle Valley for the future use of the town's residents. So that's the request that's coming. The municipal boundaries of the town are this dashed line right there. Run down Porcupine Rim, crossed around Mountain, back up essentially to Castle Creek, down and right there, crossing Castle Creek again. There's the Colorado River right there. There's the road coming into Castle Mountain. Looking at that on an aerial, that's pretty close. I had Dave go ahead and put this on an aerial photo. That'd be a pretty close approximation of what those boundaries are. There's Daystar Academy. So the current status of the town water rights that we described, all lots within Castle Valley are listed on these four rights as a place of use and shown with a point of diversion. So change applications, permanent change applications were filed by the town that put a point of diversion on the center of each lot and listed each lot within the town as a place of use on each of these water rights. The remaining acre feet and uses for 05387, it has 489.2 acre feet that is remaining, which would serve us 79.1 acres of irrigation and 35 domestics. 05411 has 1,053.2 acre feet, serve us 168.5 acres of irrigation, 48 head of stock, and 91 domestic. 641 has 162.9 acre feet, 25.1 acres, 10 head of stock, 27 domestic. 709 has 21.17, 2.7 acres of irrigation, 0 stock, and 11 domestic. So a total of 1,726.47 acre feet of water, equivalent to 275.4 acres of irrigation, 58 head of stock, and 164 domestic.
Those don't have to be allocated to those areas, do they?
I mean, do these uses?
Yeah.
No, the town could file a change application. Say you had a big commercial ice cream shop come in and said, we want to make ice cream. The town could file a change application and change some of the uses from irrigation to commercial.
What about to domestic or any other? I mean, yeah. You can do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. They could change it to any other beneficial use that is currently recognized by the state. And the process to do that is they file a permanent change application and be advertised We take comments, protests, they go through the whole process, and then we issue a decision on that.
Mark, could you clarify what you mean by remaining acre feet of water?
Yeah. This is, if you remember in the beginning, the rights were for 476.9 acres of irrigation and 1,300 head of livestock. So there have been a number of applications that have come in that the town has entered into water right agreements with residents within the town, and have the residents have placed the water to beneficial use and have used up that amount of water on existing applications. So this is what's left.
Okay, of the original uses, or of the original applications, there are a host of uses, many of which were proved up, perfected during the adjudication. What is the total of proved rights for the valley?
Well, it would be the difference between this number and the original number, and we'd have to calculate that out.
Okay, so this number is basically reflecting everything except those rights that are perfected.
Either perfected or approved and still working through the proof process.
Okay.
So wasn't the total irrigation that was approved about 475 acres, so it was about 200 acres
yep.
worth of use that's been perfected?
Yep.
So that would be about 1,000 acre feet?
Dave probably figured that out. He's pretty quick with his calculator.
I think that agrees with the numbers that we've guesstimated, but I want to make sure that you're in the same position, that those are perfected rights that belong to Castle Valley, and there's no question that with continued use that they don't need proving up again or any other activity associated with them.
Right, most of them are, but there's some of them that have been approved, and you've done water right agreements, but they have not submitted proof yet.
But those would be in addition, additional acre feet of water for those, not the original amount that was perfected.
The total amount of water and the uses that are shown here are currently not in use, and they are unperfected?
Yeah, these volumes are not in use anywhere.
Okay.
And are these uses is what the town is holding into, or is it both the town and private rights to?
The ones that we're showing right here?
Yes.
These are the uses that are listed on the water right that the town holds currently. Now, the rights that have been
proved
up may show some differences to this based on whatever those applicants did with the water at the time. So the town may have entered into a water right agreement.
Meaning we dealt with the state, not the town.
And that would be separate. There are
from these. Okay.
Yes, there are separate individual water rights that are not associated with the town. Both that were obtained back when the area was open and during that short window that we opened it again recently.
Are there any filings specifically for municipal use for Castle Valley?
No. And that
could you clarify that question? I think that's a real important question, and why don't you elaborate on it?
Well, I guess maybe before I go there, is Castle Valley Town incorporated?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, then they would be entitled to file for municipal types of water rights. They could do a change application to convert these to municipal rights. But I have to be perfectly honest, I didn't know what to expect in this meeting, and I didn't know what to prepare for. But I thought, well, I better look at something. So I went out on our website and was looking at the town of Castle Valley and trying to determine exactly what kinds of water rights were here. And I think that I stumbled across one, 05-2249. Does that one ring a bell with anybody? And I think that the search that I was doing was for municipal types of rights. So I was thinking, okay, there must be something out there that's municipal, but again, we're only focusing on these four rights. So I thought, well, perhaps there may be something in addition, or there may have been change applications that would have been filed to convert these from the irrigation stock domestic to more of a blanket use for the town for municipal purposes.
And they're really glad to hear you say that, John.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. This is Ron Mengel for the recording. Okay. I'm very glad to hear you say that. I think that's a marvelous idea, and I suspect the town council will be considering doing just what you recommend.
Terrific. Okay.
Thank you.
So could those municipal use that you came stumbled across, could that have been for fire protection for the fire department, or would that be...
It may have been. Again, I just had just a few minutes last night just before I went home.
I'm curious.
I was out here to figure out where we're at on the face of the planet. And
great. Are you aware of anything?
I wonder if it was the one we filed to try and force the developers to turn the water up over to the town so they wouldn't be lost.
There's a bunch of points of diversion on that.
I think that's what it was. We filed a fixed time, or it might have been, I think it was a fixed time, and we tried to do that in order to get developers to turn the water up over to the town, these four.
I was trying to look on my BlackBerry here to kind of cover my derriere, to go out and look at that water right number to see just exactly if I was correct or not, but I can't, I don't have service here, so I'm not able to look.
I believe it's been withdrawn.
It's been withdrawn, so I it's no longer a valid right? Okay.
So Rick, do you have any thoughts you want to add on the history? Rick's been around a long time. Do you want to add anything else before we move on to... Okay. So if we did proceed with the requested policy change, the language would look something similar to this. There would be a blurb on the website in our policy page that said that there was a specific restriction, and the language would go something to the effect that the town of Castle Valley surface and groundwaters will be closed to new appropriations within the municipal boundaries of the town, and would have a date of when the policy would become effective. We talked with the town and looked at setting that date out a ways. We just put in there for now September 1st, 2010. After that date, new diversions and consumptive uses must be accomplished by filing a change application on valid existing water rights owned or acquired by the applicant. Water will also remain available for use based on a water permit agreement with the town of Castle Valley. And then we'd show a map of the restricted area, which would be the town's municipal boundaries.
Mark, to clarify, if me as a landowner in Castle Valley is currently working with the state to prove up water, and I'm in the process of doing it, how does this September 1st, can you clarify how this September 1st date affects me?
If you have an existing water right and you're working to prove it up, this won't affect you at all.
Okay.
If you want a new water right appropriation from the state, and you're within the town's boundaries, you would have till September 1st to get it submitted. And we would act on it till that date.
I think it's important to know that this policy would not affect those people that are working diligently to prove up the water that they have and that want to stay with the state. This does not change that.
Thanks for that question.
Right.
Good question. Yeah. And it's also important to note that we've deliberately put the date out there at September 1 for those who are current residents who would like to get their own private right, even if it's a 2010 date, that they have a window here all summer and the rest of the spring to go through the process to get it done. So we didn't try to close it off tomorrow. We tried to give a window that was out there that would allow people that flexibility if they so choose. Figuring that the amount of applications that happened in that period wouldn't drastically affect what we were trying to accomplish overall.
Now, we did receive a comment via a phone call from Dana Rogers. He has a fixed time application within the valley. He was concerned about when his fixed time application expires, whether or not we would renew it. And so that's something that we'll have to consider as a new question that I hadn't considered, that we probably ought to talk about. It's an existing fixed time in use. It has a fixed lifetime. And 17 years from now, it'll expire. And so whether or not there should be an exception in the policy to allow existing fixed times to be renewed, or how we deal with those, that we probably ought to address it in policy.
Yeah.
There's not a lot. Rick, do you have any idea how many fixed times are in the valley?
I think there's only half a dozen.
Just a handful.
How big are those applications?
No more than 5 acres.
So they are larger than the standard 1 acre by family.
26, there you go, 30 acre feet, yeah. I think there's this for 5 acres, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's two or three that are for 5 acres for grapes or pasture.
Well, we probably ought to address that particular concern in the policy, so it's covered. So when it comes up, it's covered and we know what to do.
My prove up time is still available to me.
Yes. Now
the question?
Let me make a comment about fixed time applications and the direction we're headed. I don't know if we're there yet. But for fixed time applications, we are actually looking at not requiring proof to be submitted. So that is the direction we're headed, or at least the discussion the state engineer has had with us, is that a lot of times proof doesn't get submitted until there's only 5 years left on the application, and then it dies, and why did we make them spend all that money to do proof when it's gone anyway? So there's a discussion among the state engineers management right now about just extending the proof deadline to the end of the fixed annual period and not requiring a whole bunch of money to be spent for something that goes away.
They would need to proof it up if they extended their right. Maybe not.
Technically, the code does require that a proof be filed on it. It does say that the state engineer is that they're under the obligation to go ahead and to submit that proof. However, the concept of a fixed time application is that it can remain approved only as long as the water is available. And so, in essence, if Utah develops its allotment under the Colorado River and there's endangered fish flows or some other controversy that comes up where they're going to go through and they're going to have to curtail some of their uses under these fixed time applications anyway because it's considered that the water is no longer available. Even if they prepare a proof and submit it on that, they're not able to continue to divert the water on the fixed time because the water is not available. So that's the reason that we thought it was perhaps we want to know what's happening with the fixed time applications, but the formal submission of proof is probably not going to be something that the division is going to demand.
So, just for a nice dialogue here, all those fixed times are juniors to the junior rights to the town's right.
Yes.
Okay. So, in a time of pinch, the town would be in a position to, as the state engineer, turn those fixed rights off, those fixed times off, if there was ever a drought.
Potentially, if there's impairment issues or something like that that do crop up and there's not sufficient supply to provide for all of the rights, the state engineer could go in and distribute by priority, and certainly those fixed times would be one that would
be junior,
would be susceptible to being cut.
So my point is that I personally think that the fixed timers should have their fixed time right, But I also think that the town of Castle Valley has surplus water rights, and they should be coming to us for a senior water right. And then at a time of pinch, it comes down to more rationing of the town water right amongst the users, and they're on that senior water right versus, yeah, I mean, I just think it's important to get it out that they're junior to the town, and in the town, in a time of tight supply, they're junior to the town.
Okay, that's a good segue right into our next part of the presentation, the advantages and disadvantages of this proposed policy.
Yes, who gets to do that?
Go ahead, Ray.
Just so you know, there's three fixed times that were filed in the Castle Valley.
Just three?
Just three.
Okay. So, and as a division, we wanted to try to maintain a neutral stance to this, and so we've asked the town of Castle Valley to go ahead and talk a little bit about the advantages and disadvantages that they see to this proposed policy.
Thank you, Mark. So, I think, let it be said that Ron and I, Ron's our water agent, water rights agent, and I have spent a lot of time thinking about this situation with the idea that we would use the water for the residents of the town of Castle Valley, and so that it was equitably and, you know, distributed so that, well, first that we manage it so there's enough for everyone, because it appears there is, and secondly, that we manage it in a way that's fair to all the residents and maximizes the beneficial use of it. So, as far as the advantages of why we might want to do this, or we think we should do this, is the town's water rights are early priority date, and so first in time, first in right is the way it works, and that's where I was alluding to how I personally think the fixed time rights, I think they could easily come into the town's rights, and it would not be a huge problem at present anyway. We have people in the town who have water rights nearly as large as, you know, 5 acres of irrigated, so it's not unusual or different from existing water rights within the town's, or water user agreements within the town's rights. So the first advantage is that anyone who's filing a water right, a private right today, is getting 2010 date, appropriation date, whereas we're 1960s, and I think we're clearly superior in that level. As you saw, there's a set upper limit of a volume of water with the state of 6.73 acre feet. We base your water user agreement based on what you can show you can use and are using, and so we don't have that restriction as a town. Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the town just giving out enough water to water an acre?
No. Town is letting you show us what you're using. It's a new day. What you're using, and we will distribute water user
agreement. Is that in writing?
Is that in writing?
In the water use agreement, or whatever you...
There's no set limit.
Water use agreement has various fields in it, which the amount of water in terms of acre feet are designated. And the only limit that the town council has imposed is that if the water right requested by a person within the community exceeds 8 acre feet, that request goes to the town council for approval prior to being granted. If you would come to the office here and ask for 7.99 acre feet of water, we could sign you up for that tomorrow.
You have to show that you can.
Does it go into a conditional use then?
Well, I think the deal is it goes into a situation where in a time of need that we've never had, those people over 8 acre feet could be cut back. That clause is in there. We don't foresee in the foreseeable future, at least Ron in my lives, that we're going to be there.
Sounds vague.
Well,
It may be fairly vague, but it's also a situation so that the rights can be appropriated to all people and everyone gets enough during a time of need. So that's the idea behind it. Is it so
the state even has processes when?
Yeah, and the junior rights are the ones that would not be getting water.
They have other processes.
Right. But the point is
when if there's problems with the aquifer. Or,
and our clause does say that if you're pumping impairs your neighbor, that then there are issues too that the council has and the town has the right to look at. So that if somebody's pumping so much,
hopefully there's proof.
Yeah, well, obviously there's got to be some proof, doesn't there?
I think it needs to be said that in order to protect this great amount of water rights, a process and specifics had to be put in place and followed to the best degree possible. And that's what you're seeing in that agreement. Without putting those specifics in place, the town can't claim that, in fact, they have a process, that they have the ability to meet the test of being a public water supplier, and in the future, I hope, a municipal water supplier, such that we can hold on to the greater amount of rights and make them available to the public as needed.
And you're right, and I understand that, especially in the past when there was no...
Right. I mean, what we're looking at is the adjudication process, how close we came to losing those surplus water rights of the community. And Ron and I and the council are, you know, committed to putting in place a process that ensures that we can hold on to those.
To what's left.
Yeah, absolutely. And that also, by showing that we need those rights to fill our future use, thus people are coming to us to get water user agreements, that shows, justifies to the state that we in fact do need those surplus water rights for our future use. So this is kind of a cyclical thing here. So obviously from the town's perspective, both from a management and trying to protect the aquifer, and also from a holding on to the surplus water rights, it behooves us to get people to come to the town for those water user agreements. Is that logical?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, if there's any questions, Ron and I certainly want to answer the questions and make sure that you understand the logic behind the thinking, because it's important, and it has had a great deal of thought.
My biggest issue showing up tonight is the how this could all affect the private rights that aren't affiliated with the town.
Well, in general, it can affect the town, the private rights, until a time of short, you know, and then that comes to first in time, first in right policy. Our water user agreement's a $95 fee versus the $150 state permit, and our water user agreement basically allows you to come back to us and get more water if you can show you're using more water without paying a new fee. We want to encourage the citizens to keep us up to date on what their consumption of water is so that we can have accurate records, so that we can show the state that we're keeping accurate records and justify, again, our position as a public water provider and supplier, and, you know, show that we're documenting the use of the water. That was part of the problem in the past, that we weren't keeping accurate enough and detailed enough records. Economy of scale and the proof process. As Ron mentioned, all the rights that have come through the adjudication are basically proofed up. The rights beyond that will need to go through some form of proofing. We're still figuring all that out. I'm not sure how things change if we become a municipal provider. That's one question I think that we have, is does that status change and how that works? But we are working our way through those questions. That leads right into possible future municipal beneficial use designation. In our present status, we can use water basically without filing the change application for domestic, irrigated, or stock.
if we become a municipal provider, we have a greater leeway. Right now, we're not in a position without a change application to provide the fire department with water rights, for instance. Whereas if we were a municipal user, we would be in a position to do that. I think commercial was mentioned. I'm not sure we're really going down that road as a community because of a number of issues, but it would give us greater leeway, and I believe, at my fingernail scratch understanding of it, a little more leeway on how we accounted for that. So right now, by lot, we're keeping track of everything very specifically by domestic, stock, and irrigation. This next one is managed locally by the Castle Valley Town. Thus, we as locals are managing our neighbors' water rights, and I believe that we are being pretty receptive to the issues our neighbors are going through, and we've tried to design a system that was flexible to make sure that everyone got water and that people weren't cut off. Part of the issue is to protect the aquifer enough that we don't ever reach that day when there is a time of shortage. And so far we haven't gotten there, and I'm optimistic, at least for the foreseeable future, that we'll stay in that position. So prevent or limit over-appropriation of the aquifer. Obviously, we're doing this just for the town of Castle Valley boundaries, partly because there's issues in the rest of the basin where people need to get some things sorted. Willow Basin needs to look into water rights for fire protection, for instance, and we wanted to avoid a big squabble over this. We also have talked with the state engineer's office about the fact that generally when this is done, there's more of a study done that backs up the assertion that the whole aquifer should be closed. In this case, there's a general feeling that with our rights, we're getting close to the maximum of the water, our unused rights, we're getting close to the maximum that the aquifer can yield, yet the money to do that kind of study is not cheap. And so this was seen as a short-term solution while we figure out how to grapple with those other issues. My hopes would be that other users in the upper basin would get their acts together and get their rights and thus be feeling in a good position and be willing to go for closing the basin with us, because once they had those rights, they wouldn't have a reason to be opposed. They would support this because they were all set up and they, just as we are as the town of Castle Valley. So that's my hope over the next 5 to 10 years, that will come to fruition. As we went through the Willow Basin fire protection planning, I numerous times encouraged people like Gene Chiaris and Jerry McNeely to get the word out that they needed to get their act together and get their water rights for fire protection and whatever else they might need up there. So that would be my hope. That way is the way it would go. And then somewhere down the line here, we could close the whole aquifer as it once was, as we saw from earlier in the presentation. Anything to add to that, Ron?
No.
The disadvantages, well, water rights are owned by the town and used by an agreement. I guess there's always some level of uncertainty there. I know that this council and the previous council have gone through a long and arduous task, first to hold on to the surplus water rights and then to put in place a system to account for them so that this would... so that we would protect those water rights so they'd always be there for the town's residents. Part of the reason I hired Ron to do this job, and part of the reason he was willing to do this job, which is, we're not paying him what he's used to being paid, that's for sure, is to once and for all get these rights and get the situation in a status that the community no longer had to worry about it, and we could have confidence in our government and our system with it. So, I know that both of us are committed to that fundamentally, and that's what we're up to. I personally see the disadvantage of being managed locally, as we mentioned just a moment ago, is an advantage. it, of course, the onus is on the town to do a prudent job of managing those rights and keeping track of them and administering them. So the idea of having a water rights agent was to entrench that position in the town and make sure that it wasn't just somebody's afterthought of a job. It was somebody's job to make sure that we held on to those and managed them prudently. So that's how we came to the logic of the position and where we're at today. So I guess from my perspective, that's about it. I can answer questions too. Ron can answer questions. And if there's questions for the state folks. Yeah. And I would like to thank you gentlemen for coming down and helping us work through this, because we had a meeting with Mark and Rick a month or so ago that was most helpful, and I feel like we're on a very good relationship right now that hopefully we'll do our end of it to uphold it. So anyway,
we got to mention too that we would like to compliment the town. We think that they're being a very responsible municipality in the sense that they're looking to their citizens first to try to use these water rights instead of selling them down the river to the highest bidder. So it's good to see a municipality look to their citizens to put their water rights to use instead of just selling them down the river.
I think we realize that we're in a, compared to many communities in the West, we're in an enviable position. And it's our responsibility of stewardship to the community to maintain that position. I don't know that a lot of communities with our population and our overall usage have the kind of surplus water rights that we have and are able to hold on to those for the future. So we're also trying to design a system that's flexible enough that if the future would change drastically, that those water rights could be put to use for those kinds of changes, whether it be agriculture, commercial, whatever is necessary.
So prior to wrap up this discussion, we'd like to turn some time over to John Mann to talk about why the division is willing to consider this policy John.
I don't want to hit the lights there, so I stay awake here. Can we turn this projector off too, Mark?
Yeah. If you'd like to get comments into us, you can submit written comments by May 15th.
Turned off the fan. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Well, I'd like to make a couple of comments. I don't know that they're necessarily all about why the division is either supportive or not supportive of the proposal that's been made by the town of Castle Valley, but a couple of things to consider. Number one, I'd like to reiterate that this proposed change does not retroactively affect any existing water rights, whether they be filed or whether they be perfected. Any water right that you have that is currently in place, even an unapproved filing, would not be affected by this policy change. It would only be one that would restrict new filings of applications. Okay? The other thing that I wanted to point out, and perhaps I shouldn't have turned the projector off, but you may have noted on Mark's presentation that he had an aerial photograph with an outline of the town boundaries. And then just outside, perhaps even across the fence line, there's a property that's not included in the town boundaries. So one thing that you need to understand is that by establishing lines for a town boundary or whatever it be, those are not magic water barriers. Okay, the aquifer and the water system itself extends beyond those boundaries. And so what happens across the line may impact water users within the Castle Valley boundaries. And then what happens too, one of the questions that I had as I sat through the presentation and listened to the discussion, is what do you do if some of the people that are outside want to incorporate into the town? So that's another issue to reflect on for the future. Another thing is that the Utah Constitution actually prohibits municipalities from divesting themselves of water rights. I'm not sure if you understand that or not, but
from selling them.
I understand.
From selling them, from leasing them, all kinds of different things, okay? So it's a little bit like the tar baby, you know, you just can't quite shake it. But when you're a municipality, you have them, and you don't really have the option of selling those. So again, and I don't know for sure, but the way I understand it, the town of Castle Valley would be likely included in that. If you disagree or you want to investigate whether or not you have excess water rights that you want to try to market somewhere, then you probably ought to discuss that with legal counsel to determine whether or not you're able to do it or not. Oftentimes, communities will go through when they want to have flexibility in regard to water right wheeling and dealing or whatever you want to call it, okay? But they will establish a water district and have those water rights deeded to it. So it's a special service district or something along those lines and not a formal municipality that's holding it.
So that that happens if we create a municipal water. Or does that happen when we close the aquifer?
No, it's a provision in the Utah Constitution. They established that eons ago, and so it would be more dependent upon whether or not you are a municipality and holding the water right than anything to do with this particular policy change. Another thing is we've talked a little bit about priorities and whether these rights have been perfected or not. I'm still slightly unclear on it, but I believe that the ones that have been on the board that Mark has discussed are unperfected. Is that correct?
Originally perfected,
they were perfected, but the change applications on them.
So now they have a change application running on it, but the water rights themselves are perfected?
Yes.
Okay, so the 50-year period and all that kind of stuff doesn't really apply to them then, since the water right itself is perfected, correct? Okay, very good then.
Before just rambling on here, could you clarify what you just said for everybody in the audience, because it could be misconstrued a lot of different ways.
Okay, under Utah water law, those of you who have a private water right may have some understanding of this, but the way that the law outlines a means for acquiring a water right is that you file an application with the state engineer to appropriate water. And then the state engineer is directed in the statute to establish a deadline for you to place the water to use, to develop the point of diversion, all those sorts of things. And then when you have the water placed to use, you're supposed to hire an engineer or a surveyor to come in and to document what you've done with the water and to submit what's called a proof to the state engineer's office. And then the state engineer will submit or will issue what's called a certificate on that individual water right. On the change application for the city or for the individual rights that you hold, you'll each have to kind of go through that process. But anyway, that certificate, once the state engineer issues it, accomplishes what we refer to as perfecting the water right. That means that it's finalized, it's valid into perpetuity. To the extent that you maintain the use of that water right is valid. It doesn't change the attributes of it necessarily. It just documents what you have placed to beneficial use. So it will list and itemize the point of diversion, where it's at, the uses of water, how much, where, and if there's an issue of when, okay? But all of those kinds of details. And so basically it sets those forth. But an unperfected right is something that's subject to either being denied an additional extension of time by the state engineer, because again, the statute directs the state engineer to consider whether or not the water applicant is exercising due diligence in placing the water to beneficial use. Okay? So anyway, those are some issues. Municipalities are given certain preferences over individuals when it comes to those types of issues, but nonetheless, once your water right is perfected, it's not something that the state engineer can take administrative action against to alter. Okay, is that sufficient?
Yeah, you did mention a 50-year clause.
Okay,
and, that deserves explaining in light of municipalities and in light of our status as a public water supplier.
Okay, I'll do my best. Anyway, The statutes have changed a little bit over the years in regard to this, but as I've indicated, there really wasn't a distinction up until a few years ago for private individuals and municipalities in regard to them placing their water to use. But there has always been a 50-year limit for placing that water to use within the Utah Code. And so whether you be a municipality or a private individual, irrigation company, something of that nature, from the date that that application was approved, the clock starts running, and after it hits 50 years, then that's sort of like when Cinderella, you know, loses the glass slippers and the wheels fall off the pumpkin. So, but you're supposed to, as a private individual, you would be required to go ahead and to submit your proof at the end of that 50-year period. You can receive an additional extension of time if you have placed the water to use, just to submit the proof, essentially. Okay, but as far as developing water and continuing to place the water to beneficial use in addition to what you have done at the 50-year period, I don't believe that as a private individual you can accomplish that. As a public entity, you can do that. Okay? So the code has recently been changed so that as a public entity, they can continue to do some developments on that. One of the big kind of controversial issues right now that we're facing as a division is in regard to some rights and that originated in Flaming Gorge, and a lot of those rights have not been placed to beneficial use. And so the proposal right now that has been alluded to is not even an application that's filed with the division to accomplish it, but is to develop the Lake Powell pipeline to take water to southwestern Utah.
From Flaming Gorge?
Not from Flaming Gorge. No, there would be a change application that would be filed to take it from Lake Powell.
Pipeline.
You wouldn't have to pump it very far, though, if you did take it from Flaming Gorge. So, but anyway, so that's kind of the 50-year thing, and I hope that explains it a little bit. If you're an individual, hopefully you don't take 50 years to wind up putting a simple small domestic with 1 acre and that kind of thing and getting a proof filed on that. But if you are a public water supplier, you do have some additional options to, you know, to continue to develop water beyond 50 years. I presume that the town does not have a central distribution system. That's an accurate statement, is it not?
That's correct.
Okay, very good. In the future, if you do develop a central system, being a municipality would be definitely be advantageous, and you might consider that. One of the things that it would do for you is to provide some fire protection. I understand that homeowners insurance is a little more expensive when you wind up being in an area that does not have fire hydrants and a central distribution system, tank, and all that kind of stuff. So you have gravity feed to wind up fighting fire. So for what it's worth. And again, if you did have a central system, there would also be a requirement that you meet drinking water standards. We just came from a hearing where Graham County is concerned about Matrimony Springs and the potential for them incurring some liability because there's this small amount of coliform that's showing up in their water test from Matrimony Springs, and of course everybody's fussing because people ride the mountain bikes and this and that and the other. Anyway, they want to stop and fill their bottles up. Grand County's telling them they're bad for doing it. But anyway, but the real...
It's important to know that it's not a lot of people in this community depended on that for their drinking water.
Okay, very good. But I'm just saying that in the future, the drinking water standards that are established by the state agencies that regulate that would create standards that the water within the system would have to meet. And so whereas now you're taking water from individual wells within the umbrella of the city's water rights, the town's water rights, and so those wells may or may not meet drinking water standards. I don't know if you're having those tested at the health department in terms of water quality, but it might be a good idea.
I don't know many people in the valley that drink their water.
Ah, okay.
Mine's really good.
There you go. Well, there are some treatment systems and things that I'm sure you can buy, and lots of people out there that have snake oil. And there you go. We heard people haul that stuff all over creation out here just a couple hours ago. But one other thing is that if I'm kind of thinking, maybe nobody else is thinking about these kinds of things, but as a town, are you considering whether or not, if you're allowing people to use your water right and have a point of diversion that's associated with the town's water right that's on private property, are you incurring any liability for those uses and for the wells? A practical person who is not an attorney would think no. But again, we just listened to the county engineer for Grand County, and he's saying that, and again, Scott Martin, who is their outside legal counsel, was directing them that there's a possibility that Grand County could incur some liability from strictly the Matrimony Springs thing, because they do include that as on their, one of their public water supply sources. And so I don't know all the details of this. I'm just throwing these things out just to scare the bejeebers out of you and make you think about some things that perhaps you haven't.
That forces the question, does the state incur liability for the wells that it allows?
We shirk all liability, so I'm sure that's that's not the case.
There you go.
Is there an advantage to a municipality in getting the rights proofed up?
There is an advantage in the time frame and also in filing a municipal proof. Again, the division's policies on these things have kind of fluctuated a little bit as time has gone on. 20, 30 years ago, a municipality would come in, they would have an application that they had filed for a well, say, and for an amount of water, say 5 second feet or whatever it would be, okay, for municipal purposes. They go through, they drill the well, and yet the city itself had not expanded and grown to where all of the water that would be represented by that water right that could be produced by that well is actually in use. But nonetheless, the state engineer's office has issued certificates on those types of rights where we've just said, okay, 5 second feet, the well has been shown to be able to produce the 5 second feet, and so we'll go ahead and issue that certificate. And as each state engineer comes into office, they bring their own kind of view of things time also, as it passes by, you know, creates new problems and issues for them to address and to deal with. And so the policies of the division have changed a little bit over time, and the previous state engineer, when he was in, wanted to see documentation that the water that was actually being beneficially used was what was being perfected and certificate issued on, rather than just the 5 second feet and be accounted for essentially for future growth, okay? And I don't know if you heard about Roosevelt City. There's a particular lawsuit out there anyway that the state engineer was involved with, and we caught a lot of flack over that one, but they'd gone through and they developed a well. They had an application that they were not using all of, and yet the state engineer had certificated it. And it affected other private wells if they went through and overpumped the well to the limit of their application. And so anyway, it just created some real problems.
Could I back the bus up and just try a simplified version of that? As a municipality, the burden of proof today with the state engineer is that if the pump up, if your well can pump the amount of water that you claim you're using, it is accepted as proof. Is that true?
I don't know that the current state engineer has adopted a policy to address that, so I'm not 100% sure of the answer to your question. But in the past, that has been acceptable. Okay, but that was a couple of state engineers removed.
So that would amount to, rather than all of the land surveying and all of that stuff, is the sum of the wells would have to equal the amount that we're claiming to use.
That would be correct. But again, if you do perfect the water right and has multiple points of diversion, as it currently does, at least the way I understand it, one for each lot, mm-hmm. So those lots that are unoccupied would not have wells on them. It's hard for you to perfect those until those wells are drilled.
Yes.
So unless you develop a central system and you're developing individual wells that you're having approved to be public drinking water sources, and then going through and plugging that into your central system, it's going to be tough for you. Anything to say about that?
No.
Any corrections? Am I straying? Anyway. Any questions specifically?
Do you know of any other communities around the state that are like us without a central system and lots of straws and water?
I'm certain that there are. Generally speaking, they are not public entities. They're usually private water systems. So, what about you? Do you know of any? None that would be municipalities? Okay. Like I say, lots of times you'll have like a developer that comes in, he owns 1,000 acres or 500 or whatever it be, and he wants to develop into ranchettes or something like that, so they're large lots and a simple system isn't feasible, and so you'll file applications to have a well per lot. But generally speaking, those types of applications and developments don't go public. They generally remain private.
So it's more like a property owners association or something?
Right.
Thank
you. Yes, ma'am.
Could you please give me the information on your website that Pete's going to refer to for the slides and for the detail on the recording?
How about if we email you a link to it?
That'd be
okay.
Great.
Yeah, we'll try to email you some instructions. If you just provide your email address for us, we'd be happy to do
okay,
that.
Okay, no problem at all.
Any other questions? Maybe I've given you something to think about. Maybe not. I'm sure Mark has.
Well, thank you for letting us come down. And
again, we hope that you view us as a resource to a degree. I mean, as kind of state employees, we feel like we kind of have a mandate to sort of administer the programs that the legislature creates, but also to protect the resource that's here. So we hope that you kind of view us as being a partner in that duty.
You know, one thing we should mention kind of as a closing caveat, if there hasn't been any real comprehensive study of the aquifer underlying Castle Valley. And at some point in time, we'd love to be able to, get a study done that would show what the safe yield of the aquifer is and kind of know well exactly where I am. Right now, we're operating under the assumption that there's no current impacts that we're seeing to existing wells, and there's likely additional water that can be developed. But there's no comprehensive study that's been done that would quantify it specifically and say this is what it is. And so that's kind of a caveat we ought to throw in there, that that's another reason that the state engineer is perhaps willing to consider this policy, is we don't want to over-appropriate the basin if we can help it. But right now we don't know what those limits are.
How would you do that? Would you monitor existing wells? Or?
Well, typically it's the USGS comes in and does a comprehensive geologic and hydrogeologic study, monitoring wells, looking at snowfall, looking at precipitation, looking at everything in the hydrologic cycle to try to determine what's the input, what's the output, and that's never been done.
They would also review things like well logs for the existing wells in the area to try to determine where they're getting water, what types of materials they've drilled through, that kind of thing. And one of the other things that I would like to throw out for you is that in relation to what Mark's talking about, it's a good idea to wind up monitoring the water levels in your wells from time to time so that you know whether or not those are declining or they're remaining constant. Typically what will happen with wells is that they will fluctuate during the course of the year, so they'll be high and then they'll low anyway. Generally they'll vary, but they'll stay within those highs and lows. And so if you see that they're varying but they're going down, the trend is over the long term is down, then that's a sign that you ought to be alarmed. And that perhaps
who would pay for the study?
The USGS gets,
generally speaking, the USGS is a federal agency, and what they do is they have entities or individuals that will cooperate with them on the costs. The division generally has picked up a portion of those, but usually we're looking for local cooperation also in terms of some additional funding of that.
But they're not so, cheap studies.
And they're very expensive. So they're on the orders of hundreds of thousands of dollars generally to get the USGS to do those kinds of things. Yes, ma'am.
The USGS has done some kind of studies here. I don't think it was quantity, but it was quality. I think because my well was one of the test wells, and
they may have done that.
Yeah. We were actually with them. We helped the USGS over a 5-year period, and we did monitor that.
It was quality, wasn't it?
Well, we also checked the water levels too, and if you look at the report, I think they varied about 2 feet through the.
Through the study period?
Well, through the summers, you know, like you say, mm-hmm. by fall they start to pick back up.
Yeah.
But that's in that study that we did with
We do have another program with the USGS that's not necessarily a real detailed review of individual areas, but is one on a more statewide basis. They have a network of wells that they monitor water levels in, and so there's a possibility that it's Castle Valley part of that, or not too small to be mentioned in that report, but it's groundwater conditions in Utah. And that report is published yearly in the spring. So anyway, you may or may not be part of it. I don't recall. Unfortunately, I'm new enough in this particular position that I don't know about outlying areas. I've been in Mark's position in a couple of other different areas in the state, so I'm more familiar with those, but not some of the areas outside of where I've been assigned.
Yeah. And we do have some limited studies. We participated in one that Rick was talking about that gave us a fairly good comfort level with where we're at right now. But there's nothing comprehensive that would give us a definite set of data saying here's everything to the system.
We've also started moving away a little bit from the USGS because of the expense to a sister agency within the Department of Natural Resources, which is the Utah Geological Survey, and they have also helped us in accomplishing some of these studies and again trying to pin down what the resource is and how much water is able to be appropriated from it, that kind of thing. But the one thing that we always want to stress to people is that water, even if it's groundwater, even though you can't see it, it's not magic. It's a finite and limited resource, and we need to be good stewards of it and to conserve as best we can. So anyway, but hopefully that's helpful. Anything additional?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, very good. If you just give us your email address, we'll send you that link there so you can wind up getting to it. But the division wants to support Castle Valley and the town and to assist you and wind up doing what you think is important. So
we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for having us today.
Yeah.